we are you.
Great. We're going to call a meeting to order. For the record, all board members are present except Mr. Boom. Mr. Boom is absent. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
It'd be my honor. I pledge allegiance to the flag,
of the
United States of America,
and
to the Republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for the majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. There is no action to report in out of closed session. Comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
Yes, good evening. I just really am happy to hear that we have our health and safety MOU agreement with UNA completed. I'm certainly hoping we can move forward with the opening of schools MOU. I know this is filled with a lot of angst and concern, but I think everyone knows the risks that are involved. And I think the district is taking a very pragmatic, cautious approach to this opening. And I really feel that we're going to grow together. And we're hoping that we can get these students back on course for their education, as well as protect the teachers and staff that are helping those students do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Allison.
I just want to tell the parents to hang in there. We're working to try to get your kids back in school. And we're trying to keep your kids safe. And we're trying to keep our staff safe. And I'm sure that eventually we're going to see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Trustee Fleury. Trustee Fleury, do you have any comments?
I don't know which number.
He's there. He's just muted.
Mr. Fleury, you'll need to unmute your phone. Can you do that, Mr. Williams? Okay, we'll try to come back to Trustee Fleury. Trustee Scott?
I'm here, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Susan. You have some comments?
I don't have comments, thank you.
Okay, Trustee Crawford.
Yeah, I would just like to share with whoever is listening. I don't think in all the years I've been in education, I've ever seen one topic that had so many diverse opinions. So I can relate and reflect to the parents of high school seniors and high schools wanting to open up when K through 12 do. As a high school teacher for 36 years, I probably would have wanted to do that. But then on the other spectrum, you have everyone that's want to stay on distance learning until next year. So there's really no consensus. There's not even a happy medium. So I hope we can please everyone in this, or as many as we can in this uncharted times. There's no precedent. We are working as hard as we can to do what's best for the parents and all the students. So bear with us, and we're always thinking of you. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of comments. The first one would be, I want to commend all the teachers that presented during the October 19th Professional Development Day. I would share with board members to go on the educational services site and take a look at some of those PDs that they did. Also would like to commend Dr. Greco for his keynote presentation. Alicia Wright and all the educational services department for their coordination of that day. It seemed like it was a tremendous day. And secondly, I still do not have an unclear, excuse me, I do not have a clear understanding as to what a teacher's day could look like when the district moves to the hybrid delivery model. I'm hopeful that the educational service department will be able to develop a presentation and put the link on their website of what an actual class setting would look like, how a teacher's day could look during the hybrid model, delivering in-person instruction to cohort A, instruction to cohort B at home, and students on distance learning. How to actually see a presentation, maybe they're going to be teaching a lesson. So that could be seen by us and other teachers. Sure feels or seems to me that this would be a good opportunity for teachers to get to see that in action. So hopefully that could be something they could do. And my last comment is time. The one common denominator I hear is time. It seems like there's definitely not enough time for things to get done. And I was just wondering if there's any possibility that the district or we could try to carve out some time in the calendar from the spring part of the calendar and try to move some of those days or get extra time here in the fall. Seems like a lot more is happening now in the fall than hopefully is going to be happening in the spring. So is there any way that we could try to move, much like we did the Professional Development Day for October 19th? So not sure if that's a possibility or not. We're going to go back to Trustee Fleury. Trustee Fleury, do you have any board comments? Okay. Mr. Fleury, it looks like you're still muted. If you could unmute yourself. Mr. Fleury, does it look like he's still there, Mr. Williams?
I think he's there, but I can't unmute him. He has to do it on his end.
Okay. Mr. Fleury, you would need to unmute your phone so you could talk to us. Jim, do you have any, are you able to unmute your phone, Jim? We're going to go ahead and move forward. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. So yet again this evening. I'm going to start us off, and then I'm going to have another member of the bargaining team follow up. She is on here somewhere. I haven't looked through, but Tammy Stralzini is going to help me out again this evening. So there again, you get to hear two voices instead of one the whole way through, kind of break it up a little bit. First off, I want to thank Ed Services and the entire department there. That was quite a team and quite a team effort to pull together the PD day that we had last week, and they did so in short order. I know it wasn't easy given the quick turnaround and, of course, the still relatively new delivery format that we had going on. So MUTA does appreciate the hard work and the tremendous efforts that went into that. We also want to make sure to thank the numerous presenters and the hundreds of teachers and staff members who devoted their time and energy to our professional learning and continuing our efforts to provide the absolute best education for our students and all of the students in our community. I also, as I mentioned, I don't know how many of the board members received my message earlier today, but I also do want to take the opportunity, especially as we're a week away from an election, and so with all of you there this evening, and I know at least one who will hear the recording later on, I want to make sure to thank the board also for their service to our community, because actually serving as a member of the school board, amongst other things, is actually a service to one's community and to the education of the youth in our community. I realize, as I mentioned earlier, that probably oftentimes it is a relatively thankless job, and anybody in public education can sympathize and empathize with that. So I do want to make sure to let the board know that we are thankful and appreciative of your time, energy, and service as a school board member, especially considering a number of you have served in those positions for quite some time. So we're talking about years of community service. So thank you for that. I also wanted to provide an update regarding the current negotiations between MUTA and the district. And to let you know, as well as others know, that we yet once again or still need your help as board members, but maybe not exactly in the way one would initially think. Last Thursday, the MUTA bargaining team met with the district. And as I believe it was Mr. Davis alluded to, we did actually sign off on the health and safety MOU, finally. So brought that to a conclusion. We found a way to manage to get that signed off on, so that was helpful. And we also were to begin bargaining on the hybrid or the blended learning model. And in accordance with what we know as professional educators and what we believe and know in our professional expertise, we know what is best for our students, and so we proposed that teachers either teach the hybrid cohorts or they teach full distance learning. And so, having now taught in distance learning and having done our research on other districts that have tried or are trying what is actually known as the concurrent model, because even though what's in the approved reopening plan is a blended learning model, what is spoken of in board meetings and what is coming out to teachers is actually a concurrent model. We as professional educators teaching in our classrooms right now, we know that teaching either hybrid cohorts or distance learning is what's best for our students. And I provided information to the board about a very short survey that we had of our members. We sent out a one-question survey to our members asking them and their professional expertise which model they thought was best for our students. And they resoundingly responded, almost 78% out of 411 of our educators in this district said that teaching either the hybrid cohorts or full distance learning is the best model. And there are a lot of issues with the concurrent model. There's quite a lengthy list. And as I have mentioned, like I said in the email that I sent out to the school board members, I didn't want to give you, 15 reasons why kind of thing. I mean, I know we're all short on time and we're all trying to do what's best. But the number one issue with the concurrent model, especially on the educator end of things, has to be the fact that there are inequities that are created between students in the hybrid, in the cohorts, and students who are in full distance learning. It is a documented fact. It is one that teachers across this state and across the United States are railing about and are deeply concerned about and are now trying to fix. The inequities are also the issue why, the number one issue why a number of districts are saying no to the concurrent model, because they know it creates inequities between students and in their education. And it's the last thing we need to do. I believe that our obligation as educators in this district, as well as the obligation of you as school board members, is to do everything in our power to combat inequities in education, but particularly inequities in education in our schools and in our community. When we met last week, we were, to say the least, we were disappointed in the fact that we were all of a sudden informed that the what we were putting forward as far as the best model, which was to teach either the hybrid cohorts or distance learning, we were informed that that was not a subject of bargaining. That, in fact, the concepts that we had put forward in an MOU that were related to that were not up for consideration. They weren't up for negotiation. We were informed by the district's lawyer that the board has approved the blended model in the reopening plan. And so the only way that we could actually possibly negotiate the language that we were proposing would be if the board would actually go in and change the plan, which to us sounded like quite a job. And so as we started going through the reopening plan again, so that we knew exactly what we were asking of the board, We thought it would be a good idea to go through it with a fine-tooth comb yet again so that we knew exactly what we were going to be asking the board. We discovered in this in-depth review that in the board-approved reopening plan, it doesn't actually appear to be the case that this is necessarily off-limits. Nowhere in the reopening plan is it stated that the blended learning model will, in fact, be a concurrent model. It's not written in the plan that teachers will be required to teach both hybrid cohorts and full distance learning. And so to us, that is helping us out. And I don't mean just MUTA. I mean us as a district, as MUTA, as a school board, because that makes things a bit easier. And so for us then, what we need is for the board to direct their bargaining team to bargain with us on the proposal that we have put forward, in which teachers will teach either the hybrid or distance learning. Within that, there has also been, for lack of a better term, an accusation that within this, somehow MUTA is trying to delay things. We are not trying to delay anything. We have bargaining on Thursday. So day after tomorrow, we will be back at the bargaining table. And so this is a prime time for the school board to let their bargaining team know so that when we meet with our bargaining team, that we can, in fact, move forward on a proposal, on an MOU, moving in the direction then of teachers teaching in one or the other instead of both. We have talked about it at length and ad nauseum that trying to teach both is not going to be successful for our students. We are going to have students who experience inequities, and that is patently unfair. We know that parents are not being made aware of that, and so hopefully the parents that are listening now will be aware. But we have professional educators in this district who can teach the hybrid, and we have professional educators in this district that can teach the full distance learning. They should not be asked to do both, because that is going to do a disservice to our students. And that leads me to Tammy Stralzini, who is also on bargaining with me. So Tammy. I know she's here somewhere.
I'm here. I'm just trying to my host stopped my video. All right, am I here now?
No, you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Asmussen. You had, in your comments, had mentioned about seeing a example of what this would, this model would look like. And I cannot actually show you in the board what it will look like, but I do have some comments about what it sounds like. So in an NBC news story that came out a few days ago, it was titled, Educators Teaching Online and In Person at the Same Time Feel Burned Out. Our district, in fact, our reopening plan calls our instructional model blended learning, where if you speak to district leadership, is their idea that teachers will daily teach a group of face-to-face kids, while at the same time teach not only the hybrid distance learning kids, but also the 100% distance learning kids. This label is a misnomer. It is more appropriately called concurrent teaching, or HyFlex, and was originally designed for university and graduate level students by a professor at San Francisco State, Brian Beatty. Many K-12 school districts across the country, even Yuba City Unified, have chosen to either teach students online or teach a hybrid model, not do double duty. Unlike these many districts, ours has decided to force our teachers doing just that, double duty. The same instructional model that this article describes as the most labor-intensive model of teaching that is out there. The article continues to cite teachers' experiences while working within this model. One expresses his concern about technology. If the technology breaks down, he says, students have to wait until he fixes it. And if there's an in-person issue, it's the other way around. He goes on to talk about how trying to hold the attention in two different places and give them as close to equitable instruction as possible is next to impossible. No matter what attempts are made, someone gets left out. Another teacher says 40% of her students are online, and she spends much of her time going back and forth between online and classroom students, leaving little time for meaningful instruction. She adds that if school officials, such as yourself, were to visit her classroom, they would understand how their decisions about this double-duty model really affected teachers. A little closer to home, I asked educators across the state of California who are currently implementing this double-duty model to share the pros and cons of their experiences, and here are just a few things they had to say. It's two different styles of teaching at the same time, and neither of them is done to the best of our ability because we have to divide our efforts and attention constantly. Another teacher, my son's school's doing this. It's been 3 weeks. I love his teacher. She's great, but this setup is awful. She's running everywhere. The kids at home are mostly waiting around for the kids in school to get settled. It's not fair to anyone. It totally sucks. Here's a middle school. I'm doing this at middle school. There are days that go really well and other days where I'm exhausted and just want to cry. I think the kids that are at a disadvantage are the ones who are fully distance learning. I try very hard to include them and talk to them as much as I can. Another goes on to say, it's absurd, ridiculous, and pointless. It's far worse than 100% remote, not just for the teacher, but also for the students. At my son's school, the kids who opted for hybrid have dropped out like flies now that they realize they learn better at home. One girl told me today she couldn't see anything in classes because she was at the back of the room. She can see perfectly staying at home, though she did. This school lost 12 teachers to leaves, and many classes are now being taught by subs. She also said that everything was moving along fine until the switch to hybrid. Now the teachers don't really teach much. They just assign work. One says it's worse because the teacher on the screen is now wearing a mask. And many other with this basic sentiment. I can tell you that it is extremely difficult. The workload is horrendous. Planning is very challenging. I have never been more tired, and I am not sure that this is working well for the kids either. I would not recommend this to anyone looking for a teaching model. It is not sustainable. In conclusion, across our region, our state, even our nation, teachers, those actually in the classroom with boots on the ground, as the saying goes, are finding out the hard way the pitfalls, struggles, challenges, and inequities of this double duty concurrent teaching model that our district has disguised as blended learning. They are reflecting on their experiences and realizing that a learning model designed for college really isn't as effective with K-12 students. They are wishing districts could turn back time and make a different choice. You, members of the board, are faced with that choice now. Please make the choice that is in the best interest of all those stakeholders you hold so dear. Direct the district's bargaining team to come back to the table with MUTA and discuss a different option, a more sustainable option that will not be double duty for our teachers, an option that will be more equitable for our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. Oh. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648.
I'm sorry, this is Felix. I was able to get unmuted here.
Pardon me?
Hello. Yeah, sure. This is Felix with the Operating Engineers.
Okay, go right ahead. Sorry.
Yes, I apologize. I've been trying to punch in star 6 and couldn't get through. First of all, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak today. I appreciate it. As you know, I sent an email CCing many of you regarding our request to meet and confer over the impact and effect of the reopening plan. And we've had very little success in being able to schedule a meeting. I have 9 people on my bargaining team, a total of 8 people from the bargaining units and myself, which makes 9. We made a request to meet and confer in person, mass, socially distanced in the boardroom. I did receive a phone call from Mr. Carrion late Thursday after hours. He indicated that he would be calling me the next day, Friday. I never received a phone call on Friday. I did schedule and make a request to meet with him personally on Monday so he and I could sit down and meet and confer over the process of meeting and conferring, which is time, place, date, and manner. The district cannot dictate to us how we meet. And so I still have yet to get a call from him as of today. I called the board superintendent as well, and I asked for him to call me as well, and I have not received a call. So if this is how we're going to start our relationship, it's not going very well at this point. I had hoped that professional courtesy would be that if I call you, you call me back. If I email you, you email me back in a timely manner. And that doesn't seem to be the case at this point. So I'm very disappointed, and I hope I have a phone call so that we can meet and confer over how we're going to meet and confer. The unit that I represent is the glue that keeps this district together. We pick up the kids, we provide them lunch, we provide them food and resources, and we're not going to be considered second-class citizens in this situation. So I hope that I get a phone call tomorrow so we can sit down and talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So California School Employees Association number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Good evening, everybody out there listening this evening. So before we kind of go into it, Randy, you had mentioned earlier about seeing a video or a presentation on hybrid, blended, concurrent, whatever we want to call it at this point. Alicia Wright did record videos, and so they are posted to the Ed Services website and were sent out to teachers, I believe, on Monday of this week. But just because videos were made and sent out doesn't negate the difficulty that's going to come. And so I think that we possibly see it slightly differently. I think that the blended model or whatever you want to call it becomes difficult, whether you have pure distance learners in it or whether they're separated into a different class or whether you have support people, however you want to do it. you're asking people, even without the distance learners, to work with people who are at home as well as people who are in the classroom with them. So with or without the distance learning, that becomes a very difficult ask, and it's going to be hard of everybody. So at Ed Services, we're doing everything we can to ease and hopefully teach and make that go as well as it can. But the reality is a blended model is different. I started to say some stuff on this last week, and so I'm going to say it again tonight. We are here and continually talking a lot about adult needs in this situation. I heard the comment made that, you know, better to be at home than in blended, and maybe that's the case. I don't know. I did some data digging over the last week, and so today I finished off because I wanted to see right where we were at quarter. And this isn't a judgment statement. I think that our teachers are killing themselves trying to do the best for our kids. I truly believe they are doing everything they can given the situation. I think our administrators who are at the sites trying to manage all of these different things, the distance learning components, all of the kids that we have coming in, working with our paraeducators, the labs that we have open, the support rooms, all of the kids that are at campus for all of that. I think that they're killing themselves and burning themselves down trying to make everything work as we move forward. And so I don't negate the importance of the adults, because the adults are what's going to make this work. And when I share this data, again, it's not to point fingers. I think everybody is doing the best they can given this situation. But that said, we have a major problem brewing with kids at home and trying to get things done. And a little off, normally I'm more energetic, but I got the call right before this meeting and dealing with some of these own thing with my own kids that I've been so busy here that I didn't even notice the struggles that they were starting to have with this. So that said, right now, if I was to share across our high schools, and I won't go into all the specific numbers because I don't think it's needed to make the point. When you look at the number of students, if you go 18, 19, 19, 20 at this time who were below a 2.0, you were sitting about 140 at Marysville High School. You've got 404 as of today. You go to Lyndhurst, you were sitting about 220. Today, you've got 639 below a 2.0. MCAA, if you go to Yuba Gardens, McKinney, Foothill, you see it across all of them. And it's not just across our schools. If you go Yuba City Unified, we shared data between us on these numbers. They're seeing the same trends. You call across the state, it's the same thing. It is very difficult. Someone mentioned the idea of blended learning from the idea of wanting it changed for the distance learner component. It's just very hard on kids. You're asking people to structure kids at home, to structure a day to be able to do everything we're asking when most likely their parents are off working and not able to support them. So this isn't a judgment statement. It's nothing along those lines. It's just data that I kind of felt like the board needed to have, because you're going to continue to hear adult concerns for the rest of the night. And my concern is truly for the kids that are sitting at home and what's going on with them. This isn't just our poor students. This isn't just the students who would historically struggle. This is all of our students, and it's across the realm. And so I don't know what the answer is. We're here to support whatever you guys choose. But just know at this point, we are struggling desperately with students at home. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisory unit. Public comments or teleconference meetings, please submit the public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comments card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda, or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Bylaw 9323. I do want to say one other thing that at our last board meeting, I made a mistake. By allowing the public to speak without submitting public comment cards. So moving forward, all members of the public will need to submit public comment cards in order to be recognized. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.8 states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. So we do have four public comments that were left over from our last board meeting. They were all under the reopening category. So we are going to go through those four. Hopefully we can make it through, and then we have a few more. Hopefully we can make it through all those in our 20 minutes. So I would ask that you be respectful of your 3-minute time limit, and we'll get through as many as we possibly can. Mr. Carrion, are you going to be able to? Okay, thank you. So our first is Terry Ulrich. Terry Ulrich. Ulrich? Sure, pronouncing it wrong. Is Terry there?
I did not see
him. No? Okay. I forgot. I was going to tell you. Number two.
Yes. Sir William. Yes.
Okay. Karen McKay. Is Karen there? Karen did submit a written article that I will go ahead and read. I just didn't know if she wanted to read it. As a teacher and a resident of Trustee Area 2, I am disappointed on many levels regarding the reopening plan. I do not feel there are contingencies for many issues that may arise moving forward to a hybrid model. I have so many what-if questions that only a teacher in the trenches now understands. The fact that MUTA and the district still do not have an MOU for our current working condition is also troubling. I get the impression that the district and the board do not realize how much teachers are actually working. Here's a breakdown of my average Tuesday through Friday for me. 7 a.m. get to school and input grades from the day before. 7:45 start Zoom. 8, Zoom morning business, including SEL. 8:30, Zoom ELA instruction. 9:20, Zoom intervention groups. 10:10, Zoom math instruction. 11, Zoom workshop. Students work on assignments while I monitor on GoGuardian, if it is working. 12 o'clock, I log out to Zoom to contact parents of students that have not gotten online or are not doing their work. 12:30, lunch, I finally have time to eat my breakfast. 1, Zoom math intervention groups. 1:30, Zoom EL groups. 2, log out of Zoom, check and respond to emails. Monitor students on GoGuardian, put assignments in Google Classroom for the next day, and assign them to the various apps. 3:30, I try to head home. 4 to 8, if I'm not completely beat, I monitor students on GoGuardian. I turn the chat button on if I'm available to chat. I help troubleshoot tech issues. I have also gone to students' homes to help with tech issues that we could not work through online. If you believe that teachers are working from their home eating bonbons, I encourage you to shadow me just one day. I know I am not alone. As a taxpayer, one of the biggest concerns is, why is the district paying for a lawyer to attend bargaining sessions and teacher interviews for accommodations? Okay, next is number 3, Rachel Valencia. Rachel?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, go right ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to speak to, first off, thank you and the board members for listening to my concerns. I just wanted to speak to my concerns and the district plans regarding heading back to school, where teachers are going to be asked to do both in-person teaching and distance learners. Currently, I have 28 students enrolled with me in my classroom, in my second grade classroom. And with the current schedule of distance learning, I am putting in a multitude more of hours than I would normally do if I was teaching in person. And thinking of that, knowing that I'm going to have to be doing both, teaching my distance learners and teaching my in-person learners, I am extremely concerned that my students will suffer because I will not be able to give them the best education that they need. And my students are from a myriad of different backgrounds and families, and they deserve the best education that I can provide for them. So I would just like to state that concern and seriously urge the district to please, please, please think of our students and think of what it would be like for them to be having a teacher who is having to multitask and try to do two things at once at the same time on an already very heavy workload. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Amanda Bowman. Amanda?
Good morning, board members. My name is Amanda Bowman. I am a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. I wanted to first off, again, thank everybody. I sent everybody an email basically just saying how appreciative I am that you are giving up your time, many hours of reading, I'm guessing, and a couple of days a month with us, and how stressful it would be to be in your shoes, especially right now. I can imagine that you all didn't plan on the board tenure being this way, and I wanted to acknowledge all the effort that goes into still coming and being here every single week. I wanted to address the blended model, concurrent model, whatever we're calling it. We keep hearing it discussed as two cohorts, cohort A and cohort B, but I actually think of it as cohort A, B, and C. So there will be students that I get to see at the middle school level. I will get to see them one day a week in my classroom if they choose to come to school. That's concerning to me as a special ed teacher. Only being on with them one day a week is very concerning for group A. Group B, the same thing. If it's a Tuesday, Thursday class, I will see group A on Tuesday, group B on Thursday. That cohort C is still my responsibility as of right now. They are 100% distance learning. The schedule that has been presented to me is working with my students in the classroom from 8 o'clock in the morning till 12:30, and doing some type of live streaming. I can tell you right now, my students are not watching videos independently, so I'm terrified that they're not going to be on that live stream. They aren't watching now, so I can't imagine, while I'm with them and monitoring, I can't imagine if I'm busy in my room. Then after my lunch, from 1 to 2, it's going to be that cohort C's time. Well, these kids have 4 class periods, so they'll be trying to see teachers first, second, third, fourth period in that 1 hour, 2 days a week. That seems very little, and I'm concerned that I'm not going to be able to give them adequate support. That last hour of the day is my prep time, and I tell you, almost every prep time is taken up by an IEP meeting, so it's still not my prep time, but it definitely can't always be dedicated to kids because I do have to run meetings. We do have to do distant learning plan meetings and IEPs and triennials and initials, and all of that stuff is still happening. So I would just like you to look the time frames and think about if your kid was in A or your kiddo was in B or your grandkid or kiddo was in C, and if you feel like that's adequate time, because I'm really concerned. For me, it's not. So maybe there's another option. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Amanda. Next, we have Katie Uebner. Sorry for Uebner. Terrible pronunciation.
Hi. Uebner, thank you.
Uebner, okay, thank you, Uebner. Katie.
Yes. Hi, thank you. So I wanted to speak a little bit towards the hybrid concurrent model that we're thinking of approving for our start date, and also the start date that we're proposing of November 10th. So I have been in contact with many teachers who are on this model, and they almost all say that it is not working. I am concerned as a first grade teacher that the 1 hour that I have in the afternoon to service my distance learning students is just not enough. Currently, I hold small groups in the mornings for my students virtually, where I get to work with 3 to 6 students at a time and really work on those phonics skills and those things that are super important.
for students at this level, but I worry that if I'm in the classroom with some of them and having to stream to others in their home or have them try to Zoom into the classroom, that there is no way that I can work with them on their phonics skills like I need to do. It seems to me that there are many, many teachers, in fact, I think Angela said 78% that did the survey, that believe that this model is not productive. Rocco said that we need to think of the kids, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to think of what's best for our students. And while we know that distance learning is not great, they're going to get less when we move to hybrid, because I will be managing six-year-olds in the classroom and getting them not to get too close to each other, convincing them to keep their masks on while I have students sitting in Zoom, probably, I'm sure, not paying attention, running around. I cannot control them all. I cannot control students virtually through Zoom while teaching them in the classroom. It can't be done. And if we are forced to do that, everyone will suffer. Teachers will suffer, because it is mind-blowing how difficult this will be. Just thinking about it gives me anxiety. And the students won't learn. They are going to get a fraction of what I'm able to give them now. And I know it's not as good as being full-time in the classroom, but we can't do that now. And so we need to really, like Rocco said, think of what's best for the kids, and having us do both is not what's best for them. It just isn't. The other thing that I'm curious about is, we set a November 10th date.
Okay, play with your brother.
With November 11th being a holiday, so we would see group A for one day and then group B for 2 days. Then we'd be in for a week, and then we'd have Thanksgiving, and then we'd come back for 3 weeks, and then we'd have Christmas. It seems like we are taking all of the structure we have provided for our students in distance learning, the schedules that we have implemented, and blowing them up right before two extended holidays. In my mind, that seems crazy. And I really think that the board should consider waiting until January to give teachers enough time to prepare and to plan. So we're ready to really implement this in the best way we can if we do have to do concurrent.
Katie, thank you very much. That's
thank
your
you.
3 minute time limit. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Next we have Katie Keith. Katie?
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Go right ahead, Katie.
Hi, this is Katie Keith. I am a longtime Yuba County resident. I have had children in our district for 15 years and continue to do so. I continue to say what I have said since May, let the children back in school. What about the children who are left alone at home during the day who could be in school? What about the children who are in abusive environments who could be in school? What about the children who are not getting a quality education with distance learning, who could be in school? On the Marysville Joint Unified District website, there are three goals for the district. I'd like to quote the first one. Provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of targeted population. I believe this can be accomplished as teachers, parents, administrators, and other staff are unified in purpose. On July 3rd, 2019, Mr. Gary Cena, just 1 week after he was elected as Marysville Joint Unified School District Superintendent, quoted Alvin Fodor, who was the very first district superintendent of Marysville Joint Unified School District. He quoted by saying, each student shall be given all possible aid in his progress toward maximum development of his potential as a unique human being. May that principle be the theme which lends unity to all your endeavors for all the years to come. Mr. Cena closed that video cast by saying, let's keep student growth and learning uppermost in our minds. Finally, I would like to close by saying I submit that the most effective student growth and learning can be done in an environment where parents, teachers, administrators, and other staff work together respectfully in the common goal of putting our students first. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Keith. Next, we have Rosalyn Cohen. Ms. Cohen? Oh, number 8 is, I don't know. Okay, we don't see her on. number 9. Yep. Next, we have Eris Carnegas. Eris Carnegas.
Cock magic.
What, baby?
Cock magic.
Okay.
Frank, could you mute your... There you go. Okay. We have no Carnegas? Okay. Mr. Gary Rogers. Number 11.
Good evening. Hopefully you guys can hear me. I don't know if I have the best reception.
Yeah, we can.
So I'd like to start off with talking about my motivation behind coming to the board every time there's a board meeting. I've been an educator for 16 years, 10 of them as an administrator in K through 12 education, as well as alt ed. And I've always prided myself on being a champion for students and fighting for what's right. As a parent, I want also what's best for my kids, but I feel like now I'm here to stick up for every kid in this district, especially secondary kids. It's unfortunate that our superintendent and board don't seem to care about the 50% of secondary students in the districts that are failing most of their classes, as Rocco just pointed out. It is unfortunate that a University of Chicago study from 2007 revealed that if a ninth grade student fails just one class, it decreases their chances of graduating high school by 30%. And if they fail two classes, it decreases it by almost 50%. It's unfortunate that these students do not graduate on time. They will spend their adult life in living in poverty, being incarcerated, and or being dependent on social welfare programs to survive. It is unfortunate that the district is blind to the real danger in this whole situation and is willing to let these students fail without doing something to help them. I've reviewed the guidance and the jointly written letter by Dr. Liu and the Yuba County and Sutter County superintendents and still cannot find any mention that secondary schools are not allowed to reopen. In fact, it mentioned several times that K-12 can reopen for in-person learning. It mentions a gradual reopening, which I don't think anyone disagrees with, but it should be at least each school doing so, not with starting with just kindergarten and then taking another 12 weeks on top of that for seniors to get back. This is what I like to call the slow to fail plan. This is not what is best for students, and the argument that it is has no basis. Waiting until January is probably what is easier for adults. The lack of a plan for secondary schools and the lack of caring about their academic progress, as well as the inability to think outside the box so that all students can return to in-person instruction, shows a lack of leadership. It appears that the district is hiding behind a recommendation from the county health official that we can't open more than one grade at a time. But this is not guidance, and the district does not need approval from the county official as to what the education of the district students will look like. Yes, the district should consult with health officials and follow required guidance set by the state, but unless I have missed an official document somewhere that says they can't open secondary schools, I guess it's pretty apparent what's going on. As the superintendent said the other night, it is unfortunate for the high school students that are failing, but offered no solutions to this problem. I guess the only thing that is unfortunate is that it is an election year, and hopefully our elected officials listen to people that entrusted them to represent us on the issues that impact our children. Lastly, why do the parents who don't want their children back in school get a choice, but the parents that do want them back in school don't get a choice? Let us parents decide what is best for our students. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Next, we have Crystal Ramirez. Crystal? Number 12. Crystal Ramirez. Okay, those are all the ones under that particular topic.
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused. I'm not sure what topic I got put under. This is Christy Ellison Cherry.
Who is it?
This is Christy Ellison Cherry. I got a letter saying that I could speak during public comments.
Yeah, we're not finished yet. I'll probably get to you.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Okay, so next we have Josh Gross. Josh? Josh. Number 5.
not seeing the number or the name show up.
Okay, we're not seeing Josh. Next, number 10.
I believe she's on Zoom.
Shauna Supat. Shauna?
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
I didn't know there was a specific to talk under. Mine's kind of more than one, so I just want to be real quick. But my name is Shauna Supat. I do work in the district. I am also a parent of a senior at Lyndhurst High School, and I'm a coach. So my concern with where I'm working, not necessarily where I'm working, but as a para educator, is I feel like we don't have a lot of information being told to us. We're out of the loop. At least me personally, I feel like I'm completely out of the loop. I feel like I don't know what's going on. The board meetings, yes, they're happening, but you have to submit a public card in order to even talk or be in a Zoom meeting, which is way easier to me personally than to try and call in. Being asked to be a health screener of some sort, that baffles me because I don't have enough time to do my own job as it is in my 3.5-hour shift without going over. And then to then be a health screener, I don't understand that. I'm just curious to know, you know, I deal with that. Do I have say in that? I feel like I don't, so I don't know. So then let me move on to, as a parent, my problem, I guess, is this learning model agreement. If I was to say, hey, you know what, distance learning might work the best right now, but then it says, I'm committing to this program for the remainder of the school year and or traditional school. That to me is very confusing because that's not what we've been told multiple times. So I don't know why it says that. I don't feel comfortable even signing this paper. My daughter wants to go back to school, but again, the senior in high school, it's kind of one of those things where I feel very out of the loop. I feel like honestly, board meetings would be a lot easier if we could just do a Zoom call. I know that my other three kids that are in Yuba City District, they just open the Zoom call. Obviously, they don't unmute people. You still have to insert a public comment, whatnot, but it makes it much easier and to listen in, to understand what's going on and feel like you're not excluded. So I realize that's kind of probably not what you guys are talking about in this meeting. I'm just very confused. It's very hard to be a parent and or an employee in this district that's not a teacher necessarily or an admin, because I feel like we're not told anything and we hear things second or third or fourth hand. But I appreciate you letting me, obviously don't want to come in on and complain. I understand you guys have a lot going on, all of us, I know. I do agree that the teachers trying to teach both virtually and in person is way too hard. I'm a para and I can't do both. My kids are struggling, so, and they're in person at home, and I'm online with kids, so I can't imagine trying to teach and do online at the same time. I think that's crazy hard.
Ms. Shuma, thank you very much, but that's the end of your 3 minutes. Thank you very much. Next, we have Brandy Clough. Brandy? Number 13,
yeah. Yeah,
okay. Next, we have Kaisha Clemens.
I'm here.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Good evening, board. My name's Kaisha Clemens. I'm a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. I've had children in this district. My daughter just last June graduated from Lyndhurst, and my nieces and nephews are still currently attending schools within this district. I would like to address the equity in education for our proposed model. For the middle school proposed model does not live up to our mission statement, which is to ensure outstanding student achievement by providing world-class research-based curriculum, promoting the district's core beliefs about teaching and learning. In the proposed middle school hybrid instruction, teachers would only see students in person for 1 hour a week to answer questions on content. Students would be learning concepts throughout the week through video instruction on the concurrent model, and the distance learning students would only receive asynchronous learning via video with 4 hours tutorial split between 8 periods per week in the middle school model. And we've also have the question is, have parents been told that they choose distance learning, that there's no direct instruction outside of those tutorial hours, 4 hours a week for their students? And that 4 hours a week is split between 8 periods in the middle school setting. I do not believe we're upholding the district's mission statement with this proposed model. How are we giving our students the best possible educational experience and promoting them, promoting equity within our district? And the second topic is, why isn't a virtual academy taught by staff who are unable to teach in person being considered? This would go a long way to solving equity in education for all students. And many of the district's teachers are unable for one reason or another to conduct in-person teaching. So why not make use of this resource for the virtual academy? It would go a long way to alleviate some of the workload on teachers who would otherwise be doing in-person instruction and distance learning. And this would also provide more equitable education for all the students, not just those whose parents choose to stay on distance learning or those parents who choose their students to come to school. I've been very proud of the Yuba Garden staff who regularly go above and beyond well past school hours to help all of our students. I personally don't end my day until sometimes 6 or 7 o'clock at night. Our staff is doing home visits. We all call parents in the evening to catch up, and we all do it because we love our students and want to provide them with equity in education and to provide the best education we can possibly do in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Number 15, next we have Christy Ellison Cherry.
I am here. Thank you so much. Transparency. This is what I thought we were being promised with new leadership in MJUSD. This word brought me hope for a time in our district, but alas, COVID hit, and when we needed transparency and hope the most, it was gone. As a parent of 4 students in our district and a teacher of 30 more, I am constantly wondering about what is going on. I don't feel that the district is being transparent with me as a teacher when it continues to broadcast information to parents, dictating what teachers are going to do for their students before teachers are even informed of it. This has happened multiple times in the last few months regarding the reopening plan and the return to face-to-face learning. It has caused me to feel demeaned and discouraged and to start thinking about alternative work in order to support my family. I don't feel that the district has been transparent with me as a parent when it boasts of all of its increased safety measures, precautions, and signage, which is no doubt a great feat, but they haven't given a clear procedure about what happens to a student or a teacher and their cohort if they get COVID. What does it look like for me and my kids if one of my students tests positive, or for my students if I or one of my kids does? Will my 4 children even get the opportunity to go back to school without district transportation when I work at a school 45 minutes away from home? I don't think that the district is being transparent about how many missing pieces still exist in our distance learning, hybrid learning puzzle. Why is this the case when so many other local districts seem to have all of their ducks in a row? Parents and board members, did you know that our teachers union has been trying relentlessly to nail down all of these details and more since last spring? Did you know that while the district was rejecting this forward progress all summer long at weekly bargaining meetings, the attorney for our school district was making anywhere from $12,000 to $28,000 per month out of the general fund? Did you know that at least one board member at a time can attend these bargaining meetings, but none of them do? Did you know that at least 78% of our teachers do not believe that teaching our 100% distance learners, our cohort A and cohort B students simultaneously, is what is best for students or teachers? This isn't because teachers don't want to do their job. It's quite the contrary. Teachers want students to learn. This is a kid issue. It's too late now to execute the original plan of our union that from the first day of school, we distinguish distance learning teachers with distance learning students and hybrid learning students with hybrid learning teachers.
It would have been extremely comforting for all stakeholders to have started off the year knowing the way we intended to finish. If that were the case, I'm sure that a greater majority of us would have had more sleep and less stress over the last few months. Teachers who are at greater health risk or care for those who are should not be in front of the classroom at this time, but that doesn't mean that they aren't needed or should feel bad about conditions largely beyond their control.
They should be teaching our 100% distance learners so that they, along with hybrid learners, get the best education possible in an unfortunate situation. That is the end of your time. Thank you very much. Next, we have Tamara Conry. Tamara?
Hello.
Hi.
I am here speaking as, actually, as a community member, because I do live in the community now, but also mostly as the California Teachers Association representative for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. And I want to talk on a specific area that is very sensitive, in that I'm not going to mention any names, of course, but last summer, several of our teachers had put in letters, emails to the district saying they needed accommodation meetings because they were high risk for COVID. In the end, they ended up being able to teach from home. So that is why the district is now claiming that they couldn't have all these meetings then. They just started these meetings 2 weeks ago. Teachers put in doctor's note letters to the district in July saying, I am high risk, or I live with a high risk for COVID family member. They've been stressed out, nervous ever since then over when will we return and what will I be able to do? So a couple of weeks ago when the district started having these accommodation meetings, according to Romero, the reason that Mr. Carrion, the reason that Paul Gant, the attorney, was attending half of those meetings was so they could get through them quicker. But it seems a lot of members that got a letter from Paul Gant were immediately calling the association saying, why am I getting a letter from an attorney and not the HR director? And so between Angela and I, we've attended about 20 meetings so far. There's still more scheduled. These are interactive process meetings where teachers are pouring their heart out. They so love to teach and want to be in person with their students. But I would like a couple of the parents that spoke to understand that the district didn't start this process till a few weeks ago, and they've only all had their first meeting. It takes two or three meetings sometimes to get through the process.
It goes on forever.
And they've only had one meeting, and not with all of them yet. We still have more this week. And these teachers are asking to be able to teach from home so they don't have to take a leave of absence from their students. For some of them, that's going to be a cost issue because we have no idea what the district would do in that situation. And I just need to point out, too, that it's going to be...
Andre, I do need to say that is the end of your 3 minutes. So thank you very much for your input.
I just wanted to add it's going to be a lot of substitutes if the teachers all go out on leave. Your students.
Thank you very much. Number 17. Okay, Brian. Okay. Next we have Brian A. Labrie. Brian?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Right ahead.
Hello, members of the board. My name is Brian Labrie, and I'm with Johnson Controls. I wanted to use this time to thank you and your staff for a great experience working together on the past energy efficiency project. These projects require a lot of time and effort, not just from us, but your staff in order to be successful. And there were hurdles that arose throughout this project, and we worked through them together. I wanted to specifically call out Travis, Summer, Julie, Doug, and Sal for the work that they put in to make the project successful. They were extremely enjoyable to work with, and they are valuable assets to your district. I also wanted to extend my gratitude for the letter of reference related to this project's performance. I saw from a previous meeting's agenda and presentation that the district may be going in a different direction for a future project, and I understand. I just wanted to let you know that Johnson Controls values the partnership that we established and the relationships that we developed, and we are here if the district ever needs anything in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Number 18. Next, we have Tammy Strozzini. Tammy, did you want to talk here, or was that what you discussed earlier?
I'm just going to defer to anybody else who deserves to have their voice heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. Next, we have Erica Schlusler. Erica?
Hi, I'm here. And I can't believe after all these years, you still can't say my name.
I know it. I must just not roll off my tongue right, Erica. I apologize.
That's fine. So I wanted to bring up several concerns. First, I want to do it quickly. So first is the Brown Act violation. The board committed at the end of September by having a secret meeting. Maybe you need a new attorney if your attorney thought that that was okay, but you cannot get together and speak in closed session without having an agenda posted ahead of time to the public. Yes, you can speak in closed session about things like litigation, personnel, bargaining. However, any decisions that you make when you've violated a Brown Act can be made void or any directions given. So you can go with that and figure out what you want to do there. But I think that your attorney must have given you bad information. Another thing that I wanted to bring up is that there should be another choice. We have had distance learning, half-time, and full-time as the three choices. I think you need to have a transition, which in effect is happening right now. There are many students that are coming back by appointment. That number is increasing. And I think that as students come back for small group appointments, for short appointments, they're learning how to do the things they need to do in the school and learning how to wear their mask, learning how to stay away from each other. And I think that more of that transitioning into the halftime would make a lot more sense. Please consider it. If you want to know what it's like for a big Zoom meeting, a bunch of people on Zoom, you can join me tomorrow. Let me know, and I'll send you the Zoom meeting link, because I have library day tomorrow, and on library day, everybody's there, and it's fascinating to see kindergarten on Zoom. You might like it. You could sing with us. I wanted to point out, a lot of people are saying, well, they're not going to have a vaccine for years, but however, they are working on therapies and ways, doctors are finding ways to develop treatments so that the disease isn't as fatal. And I think that that is probably something we could look forward to. Starting on the 10th makes absolutely no sense. The trimester doesn't end until the 13th. And you'll have people missing because they're having that long weekend. And with the 11th being right smack in the middle, either weekend they could extend and be long. The learning model agreements at my site, speaking of giving us a few minutes to breathe and be able to do any kind of starting,
That is the end of your 3 minutes, so thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Write the rest of it in an email to you.
Thank you. Okay, that is all of our public comments for tonight. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Hello. Together, serving every student, every day, in every way. As we transition to the blended instructional program, teachers want to know, what do you expect us to do day to day? The day-to-day expectation for teachers is to connect with students By opening their lessons with live stream or Zoom, introducing the lesson, and providing work for students to practice the skills and knowledge being learned, which a cohort of students will do with the teacher in the classroom, and the rest of the class will complete at home. There's no need for a separate curriculum. From 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock on Tuesdays through Fridays, students on distance learning and teachers can access each other for students to receive support and intervention. Students and teachers have been working together and bonding now for 12 weeks, developing relationships through their shared learning experience. The instructional program is designed for students and teachers as classroom teams to be together as we transition from distance learning to blended learning to traditional learning and possibly back. Maintaining relationships amid all this uncertainty and change is extremely for both students and teachers. Throughout our blended learning experience, students and teachers will have to miss days due to symptoms. It might be a direct contact of a positive COVID-19 case, or possibly get infected with COVID-19 themselves and have to isolate or quarantine for 14 days. This instructional program provides flexibility for the unknown while maintaining consistency and stability for students and families amid these uncertain and unpredictable times. We know this process will not be smooth or easy. There will be hiccups and glitches along the way, but in the blended learning model, teachers will be able to access and stay connected with all their students. Resources are available to teachers to help them gain confidence and feel more comfortable. Every teacher has access to their on-site instructional innovator who will be trained to coach and support teachers in blended learning instruction. Alicia Wright, our district's coordinator of intervention and technology, is producing video resources and conducting drop-in trainings for groups of teachers, along with providing teachers one-on-one support. I want to thank all teachers for working so hard individually and as a staff, finding a method that works for them to achieve this purpose. I want to thank everyone for all you're doing to help slow the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate student learning. Together, every student, every day, in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 10-13-20. Is there any discussion regarding those minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boo is absent. Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury? You'll need to unmute, Mr. Fleury.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I had to redial it again.
Okay, your vote?
Yes.
Thank you. Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Aye.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Fix yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve, Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second. I'll second that. Allison.
Paul Allison. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom, absent. Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. New business. Business services. Resolution 2020-21/11. Support of applications for eligibility, determination, and funding in the school facility program when bond authority is exhausted. Mrs. Lofty? You need to unmute, Mrs. Lofty.
Thank you. This board resolution allows the district to apply for state facility funding for eligible construction projects. While the state's exhausted all of its Prop 51 bond authority at this time, which means there's no money left to fund these projects currently, by passing this resolution, the district's allowed to apply anyway, to get in line, if you will, for the time when the state does have funding. Once our application is accepted by the state, the district would then be placed on what the state calls an acknowledged list. Once the district is on the acknowledged list, then when the state does have funding available, and provided no other changes occur, the district will be in line to receive our share of funding based on our eligibility and the construction project involved. A prime example is the Yarborough expansion project. Once the California Department of Education and the Division of State Architects approve the plans for this project, the district can apply for state facility funding. The district's currently eligible to receive $2.3 million in state school facility program funds for this project. We don't really expect to see the money anytime soon, but we certainly want to be have it available to us when it does materialize at the state level. So administration recommends approval of this resolution so the district becomes eligible to then apply for state facility funds.
Thank you, Ms. Lossing. Are there any comments or questions from board members? Not hearing any, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Oh, go ahead, Ms. Scott.
I would just like to ask, is there an expiration date on that item that she was speaking of? Does it have to be used by a certain time?
We can't make an application for the funds without this particular resolution passed by the board. But that our eligibility remains until we use it based on the age of our facilities and the number of students that we have. So there is eligibility. It's that 60-40 on the modernization. The state would pay 60%. The district shares 40% of the amount of eligibility there is, which... Like, for example, the Arboga Elementary expansion project, the total state grant amount would be $2.374 million, and then the district share is $1.582, which we far exceed by the amount of money that we already have dedicated to the project. But they do remain there. However, the state has to actually have the funding available. So what this does, it allows us to apply, get on the acknowledged list, and then once the state has funding, then the application process proceeds until we could actually get on it goes from there to the unfunded list, then to the funded list, and then eventually get some funding.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? No, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone is absent. Trustee Allison?
Yes.
Trustee Fleury? You need to unmute, Trustee Fleury. Unmute your phone, Trustee Fleury. Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Aye.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Looking for guidance. I'm not sure what we do when we lose a board member on a vote. Do we just call it absent?
Yes.
Okay. Absent, so motion carries. Next, we have Student Services 2020-21, Blended Learning Model, School Reopening Day. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the following school reopening date to transition students back onto campus for in-person instruction through the Blended Learning Model. Preschool through first grade, beginning on 11-10-20, with one additional grade level added each week thereafter through fifth grade. Secondary grades 6 through 12 beginning on 1-5-21. Mr. Cena?
Yes, our district, we have four collective goals. One's to slow the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate learning. Now, we've been working on how to reopen schools, and throughout our journey since March 11th, it's been through the guidance, public health and safety guidance. So the pillars are the tools of health and safety, social distancing, face coverings, the healthy hand hygiene, the symptoms checks, disinfecting, and contact tracing. And communication. Now, those pieces with our reopening plan, we have in place. And the instructional models to go with that are, first of all, with distance learning and now going into blended learning and transitioning, we're looking to start small and go slow so we can grow. This is from public health. They're not mandating. And they're not telling us this is how we have to do it. It's just their recommendation is to ease into it in a measured, rational, prudent, and patient way. And so as we've worked through this and as we look to be successful for all students and staff and everyone involved, the look, and it's common among districts our size and in the area, is to start slow. And so at the October 13th board meeting, we had a discussion after presentation on the school reopening plan and a discussion, and the board recommended that staff bring forward a recommendation for vote that we start our gradual approach, starting slow by starting November 10th with grades preschool through first grade, and then adding a grade level every week in successive weeks. With grades 6 through 12 starting when we returned from winter break. And since then, we've had an enrollment form went out to parents explaining the face covering and the symptoms checks, and asking parents to make a choice as to which model they would prefer at this time. One clarification in that is it does say that parents will make a choice that would last throughout the semester. But in the plan, and also careful reading of the enrollment form shares that families can opt in, but coming back in or being in will be dependent on if there's space with the 6 feet social distancing standard. Then on October, following the board meeting, October 16th, 17th, we clarified that we're targeting specialized student groups, our special ed students, our EL students, our most at risk, our homeless, our foster youth, students who in most serious cases are lacking connectivity. And then last week, we shared that we're bringing in this week our career tech ed at the high school level, ROP, CTE courses for instruction. And we're opening up, we're going to open up in concentric circles those students in pods of 10 with teachers so that we're practicing, as was mentioned earlier tonight, practicing the health and safety protocols, having people come onto campus and feel comfortable being on campus, and build our capacity to the point where we can open up with a blended model and with everyone being healthy and safe. The following week on October 19th, we had moved the teacher work day from March 10th up to Monday, October 19th, so that to help strengthen the teacher's skills for distance learning and blended learning, and to build as a collaborated to staff as well, how to come up with systems that work for them. And so as we look to set a date, we look to help educate parents and students so that everyone has a shared understanding of what we're walking into, and that we have a video coming out and brochure and outreach to help people understand what's expected of all of us and how we can all be successful. So tonight, what we're asking for is that we approve the date and open up in a phased in layered approach. This is very consistent with other multi-school districts in our area. Yuba City Unified, I think tonight is also voting on whether to approve a very similar layered reopening, as well as Live Oak Unified School District. So the three largest multi-school districts in Yuba and Sutter County would be on a similar type of reopening. So we can have discussion and other items will come to the surface, but we're asking as a little background on what got us here and where we're at and what we're asking the board to do tonight. And I guess we can discuss it and answer questions and make a decision.
Thank you, Mr. Seema. I'll start off with one comment. I went back and listened to our board meeting from last meeting, and I think I was confused. When we actually picked this particular date of November 10th, it was my understanding that was the start of the second trimester. And coming to find out today that really the second trimester doesn't start until November 16th. And it seems to me that a lot of our discussion when we were trying to set these dates had to do with the end of the first trimester. So one of the things I was looking at I think it is important for us to still start probably during that week. I know one of the other discussions we had was if we start on the 10th, that a cohort A would only get one day of instruction, and then cohort B would have the 12th and the 13th. But maybe again, in the mode of starting slow, maybe we could take a look at starting on the 12th, the Thursday, with cohort A, cohort B then doing the 13th, and then still being able to start our second grade the week of the 17th. Do other board members have any comments or questions?
Well, I have a comment, Mr. Rasmussen. This is Frank Crawford. I just want to be on record as I'm on board with most things, but I really feel we're abandoning, especially our high school seniors of this year, by not letting them come back when when November 15th or 16th. Wait until January 2nd just prolongs anxiety and anticipation and a lot of grief. So I think there should be a choice option there. And many, many high school kids that I've talked to, and that's where I spent my living at, is at high school, is they want to get back. And we're losing a lot of them. Mr. Rocco mentioned 600 and some failures in Marysville High. You got to be kidding me. Or 600 total. I'm not sure of the numbers. But, you know, you got to point at that. If we're losing 600 kids at the quarter, what are we going to lose at the semester? So are they going to start the second semester with 3/4 of them not eligible to graduate? That doesn't work for me. So that's my concern, and that's my input. Thank you.
Thank you. Other board members, comments or questions?
My concern.
This is Brandon.
My concern would be that.
Go ahead, Ms. Scott.
Are we giving the teachers enough time to have all of their supplies and all the things that they're going to need to get started? I know that that's going to be quite a bit of items that they're going to be needing, and will that give them enough time? Just getting close here, is it going to give them the time that they need to set up? That's my concern.
Thank you. Mr. Davis?
Yeah, I really think your idea of starting after Veterans Day makes so much sense. I am very concerned that our 6 through 8, never mind the high school contingent, are being held back at the district's discretion. I know there are logistics. I know the whole litany of pros and cons, but I am very concerned, as we have heard tonight, that we're holding back kids that want to be back in class. The second concern is this whole business of dual educational systems, where you have in class and you have remote being taught by the same instructor. I think that is not wise. We have teachers who are scared to death to be in that classroom for a number of reasons, whether you want to believe them or not. They're real reasons. And I believe that we really need to consider a two system that has been presented by the union as a reasonable compromise to get us going. I think it's silly to, because nobody else is doing it, we're not going to do it. I think it's worth consideration. I have discussed this with at least one of my principals, and that made sense to her. that her teachers that are feel safer and are more confident at teaching out of their home versus those who want to be in classroom. So it's a personal decision. And I know there are logistics and legal and all this kind of stuff that have to go with that. But I think the district needs to be much more accommodating, especially in this time of this pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Randy, this is Paul.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got to say, I just totally agree with Randy Davis on everything that he just said. But I'd like to add something else, too. I mean, I'd really like to, I really think we ought to have, I know how hard the teachers were already working. I know how hard the administrators have worked on this plan. But I think the teachers should be able to have the option of teaching one or the other, okay, if they can, if we can do that. The other thing, as you brought up, well, let's start on the 12th after Veterans Day. Well, why not just go to the next week and have pre-K through second grade start that Monday on the, what's that, the 16th? And, you know, that way they start at the beginning of the week rather than starting at the end of the week. And that's, I think, is all I want to say.
I guess my thought, you know, regarding that, Paul, and it certainly wasn't something I thought of. I had a discussion with Dr. Greco today, and that was actually a recommendation of his. But thinking back when I was back in the classroom, starting, it seemed like we used to always start on a Wednesday. Yes, that was when I was counseling, not in the classroom, but it was kind of nice to have a couple of days and instead of having to start into the whole week was my thought. Teachers could get their lessons together and only have to do it for 2 days and then have a holiday. But I understand yours also, Paul, about having a whole week in there.
I agree, Randy.
Any other discussions or comments? Do we have any staff input? Mr. Fleury?
Mr. Fleury has something to say.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jim.
I've got many emails from parents, students, all of them. They're really worried about the high school. And I can understand because I've got one of them in high school. And it's a, they're losing. I know we have to do this, but there's a real concern from parents what they're losing in the high school and the middle school. The middle school is probably worse. Kids do not study on their own. And if mom and dad aren't there to supervise, they don't study at all. So I understand why we have to do it, but I just want you to know there's been a lot of concern from parents and students. That's all I've got to say.
Thank you. Do we have any thoughts or recommendations about what board members would consider, say, Frank, when do you think we should try to start the high school?
Well, in my honest opinion, as soon as legally possible through the county health department, in my opinion, because, like I said, we're abandoning our seniors. And when I heard the failure rates, I find that devastating. So, yeah, I do change an outlook, but this is an ever-going changes. You know, it might be different next week, but right now we're holding back a lot of high school kids. If we have 900 kids in high school and 600 of them are failing, are you kidding me? And we're going to put them at the start of the second semester behind with all the stress and anxiety they've already had. It just doesn't work for me, Randy. I'm old school that way. And I would like them to start when the K-1 start, ASAP, and move from there.
I agree, Frank.
Thank you.
Let's do the same thing.
I agree with you too, Frank.
This is their future.
Start them as soon as we can.
With Mr. Steen, I think Mr. Fleury Mr. Fleury, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think we should start as soon as we can for the elementary, I'm sorry, the middle school and the high school. As I say, I've heard all the comments from parents and students, and they're concerned that it is their future, and it is creating a lot of stress for them. I just think people understand how much this stress is creating on the children, the kids, or young people. And we got to take that into consideration, too. That's all I've got to say.
There's a taking under consideration, absolutely. And the success of every student is what we're looking for. With with 23 school sites starting this quick this time, there's no perfect option. A large school district of this size, the only school district that I'm aware of in our area, Chico Unified, and they ended up delaying their start because, they ended up delaying it. School districts in Sacramento that are bigger than ours, the bigger the school district, they're taking longer. And it's not because they want to hurt anybody or not considering somebody, but it's putting it together and being successful and doing it right so that it has a strong foundation and it serves everyone. We need to open, and we need to go slow, and we need to start small and go slow so that we can grow. And in time, we will get all the schools will be open January 5th. It's a process, and what we're talking about is heartfelt and it's granted, and we want to serve that, but it's not wise to open this big this soon, but we will. I mean, it's almost 2 months away, and I realize that sounds like an incredibly long time, but the figures that were sent out tonight are figures that from the quarter progress reports, and those studies or the information was communicated. It was October 15th, and we started the targeted instruction for our highest at risk. And we're bringing students on slowly, and we have teachers that we're talking about concern of staff, some who have not been on campus since March 13th or so, and that we haven't geared this up since then. It's a gradual process. It's not a just start it and open it. The high schools are working on interventions for students. It starts with an awareness. When those numbers came out, it was an awareness. And so there's been communication. This was new on everybody. It's new in expectation. And so there's energy being focused to address those concerns, and I would suggest that hearing those concerns, knowing those concerns, and knowing there isn't an absolute best way to do it, or the way to do it, But given the circumstances and the choices, this is the best way to open slow and eventually be open in January. That's actually ahead of a lot of districts. And I know it's not ahead of districts that are smaller and north of us, or that are single school districts, or that are charter schools, or that are east of us. Many of those areas have been in orange before us, or they've been out of the purple. Remember, we're in a pandemic, and we want to prevent the yo-yo effect. And we also want to, as we were saying about the instructional program, what we're trying to do is be supportive to families and students and staff. And so we need to start. And as was said here earlier tonight, we have stakeholders that are all over the spectrum. And we have people that, hey, we want to start now, we want to go full bore, and we want to start. And then we have people that don't want to, we want to put it off till much longer. And that's reflective of our state and our nation. And, you know, that's where people are. But, I'd recommend starting slow, and then we'll build. We'll bring in, we'll address the intervention needs and help so that those numbers are not what they are now. The other piece is, it's not just in Marysville that those numbers are that way. That's a product of distance learning throughout. We've got a new program. People are not used to it. Expectations. Last spring, people were held harmless, and now there's an accountability piece too. So, our district's been doing a lot to support. We've had our schools have had over 1,600 home visits in the first 11 weeks of school. Been reaching out to students, making great effort to help them. I'll just say it. We need to open. And those concerns are absolute. But there's a, we need to go slow.
Can I just say something real quick, please? You know, sure. I'm thinking about our high school seniors that are on the verge of sometimes, like, we know the failure rate right now. Shouldn't we at least give them a chance, or give them that opportunity to sort of like get their credits so that they can, we can have a better graduation rate come the spring or the summer? Because right now we have those seniors that are failing. I think we need to at least give them an opportunity to try to catch their credits up in at a semester so that they can go forward on it. They even wanted to go like to Yuba College or whatever, but December the 16th would probably be the end of that semester for them. But we need to at least give them an opportunity to get their credits together, get their grades passing, so that it will not interfere with their next semester of school. That's one of my big, great concerns. And like, that's giving them enough time. And that's sort of like, still, we're going to still open in January. But I think we'll do a disservice if we give the high school, just push them in there right now. That's me. That's my opinion.
Thank you. I would like to say that at our last board meeting, I guess we certainly have received more information since the last board meeting, during our discussion, we gave direction to staff that, you know, these were the dates that we agreed upon. I certainly guess that we're now thinking that those aren't the dates that we really think are most viable right now. So So, Frank, I would like to come back to you because you're the first one that, mentioned or talked about it. What would you see is your thought to just open up grades 9 through 12 all at one time, or are you looking at trying to phase in the grades, or what's your thinking there?
Well, and I want to reiterate this. If we follow the county guidelines, the state guidelines, which Gary has done so far, I'm not saying, you know, jump the gun and go beyond that. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, aren't now that we're out of that other color, can't high school and middle school and K through one all start in that November date, at least in the two-day hybrid, whatever you want to call it, distant learning hybrid? That's what I would want. To clarify it, if you wanted it in a motion, that would be what the legal guidelines are, because they change. That's why my opinion has changed in a few weeks, Gary. I mean, you know, things change. And as you know, I've had an opportunity to observe another school district for a month. It's in that now. So at least I've done my homework there. So that would be, if I were to rewrite a motion, it would be, I'd follow the legal county guidelines, county health director, and if we don't violate that, because we'd have to come back to the table again, have everybody start K through 12 at the same time. Then you have continuity. You eliminate a little of this because it's crazy as it is now, and like I said, it changes every day, but at least to be some continuity. If you have three kids, you've got one in second grade, Randy, one in fifth grade, and one in 11th grade, oh, good luck. And then you got to go to work, and then you got to pick them up. And who's watching them? Who at home? No. I talk to too many parents, and I'm a parent, and you are too. Think about it that way. You know, and, let's at least make the high school seniors' Christmas a little brighter by bringing them back, like Ms. Scott said, at least around Thanksgiving, so they can reacquaint with the ones that want to, reacquaint with their fellow students and friends, get their contact with the teachers, follow all the mask rules and regulations that will be in place, but get a little continuity. I found with my granddaughter in the seventh grade, when she went to the two-day on, two-day off, that was a lot better than what she was experiencing completely on distance learning. That's just the way my granddaughter is, and that's just the way I am. Did that help?
So is your recommendation that we start with the lowest grades and then also with the high school seniors?
No, I'm talking about starting everybody up. Continuity, Ms. Christina, continuity. K through 12, starting date, ending date. Simplicity sometimes is in its purest form is the best. And that's the way I look at it. I don't want, I got too many working moms that say, hey, you got to be kidding. You're sending my second grader back, but you're not sending my ninth grader back? Hey, I don't make the rules. Well, guess what? I guess I'm in that position now, so I can't say that to her. So once again, that's just my humble opinion. I'm sure it's not humble. But yeah, K through 12, continuity, simplicity, makes sense, not just confusion. Hey, what day does my third grader start? What, ma'am? Well, I have one in second. You know, it gets rather, and I respect what they're going through, Gary. So does that answer your question, or am I just rambling?
No, you answered it. One thing just to clarify, the public health official isn't telling us, you know, what we have to do in terms of she's making recommendation. But one thing in what you were sharing is that what is required is that we follow the health and safety guidelines, which means it would be a blended model, which would be cohorts. So it wouldn't be every day, it'd be of in-person instruction. It'd be 2 days.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. You misunderstood me. No, once again, it would be you're calling hybrid. Hopefully January 2nd, it's going to be all in-class instruction. That would be my goal, and hopefully that's going to come about. What I'm saying is, even with the 2 days, with my granddaughter, she got to reconnect with some of her other seventh graders, so as frightened as it was, that in itself helped her mental health, all right? No one's talking.
Right.
No, I respect some of the teachers, as you heard me say, that don't want to come back and distance learn. And if we can work that out, that's fine. But right now, let's talk about all the kids and not just portioning them out K through 12, starting hybrid, starting at the first date we agree upon in November would be my recommendation, sir.
The first day in November?
No, the first date.
We were
bettering at around the 13th, 15th, whatever you came up with, I'm comfortable with.
My other concern would be is that I think they're going to be meeting with Muta on Thursday. Is that correct? So should we hear from someone on that side of the – to see how this – just to see how they feel about
it? I've got plenty of emails I could share with you.
Okay. I just didn't know. I just want everybody to be involved so that we can make sure that we make a rightful decision so that we can move forward, because it'll work out better for all of us.
I understand.
Well, this is Brenda Davis, and I don't, let me finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have enough confusion with the disinformation that's coming out every day. And I agree with Frank. With the consistency to help level this confusion. Now, whatever date we decide is the starting date is the starting date. And what I feel is everybody's got to get suited up for this. And I really feel that we have to consider two systems. Those that are not comfortable, both students and teachers, with coming back to the classroom. And those who want to come back to the classroom. If we keep those two comfortable, I think we're going to do a lot better job of moving forward. But I agree with Frank that we need to start it all at once. Because what's ever going to hit us is going to hit us, okay, one at a time, whatever. You know, it is important for consistency. Thank you.
So with that, Mr. Cena, I don't remember the guidelines, but the guidelines were actually saying that we needed to start slow and deliberate and something else. I thought there was three items there.
Well, it's prudent, patient, measured, rational, and that's from Dr. Liu, October 5th, October 12th, 19th, and the 20th, and the 26th. That's the recommendation to slow the spread and to do it, understanding the size and complexity of our district. So that's recognized. She's even shared that if we begin to phase, and if we start phasing in, and at some point the transmission takes us back into the purple, because we're starting and we're phasing in, she will recognize that and allow us to continue with our plan, so that we wouldn't have to wait. If we went back into purple and came back, we would not have to wait those two weeks to get off the watch list, because we're starting slow and in phase. So my point in bringing it up was she's not declaring that, but she is recommending that. And as I said earlier, Yuba City Unified is following that, and so is Live Oak Unified. And I would humbly recommend that we follow that.
So what's the date?
Well, what I was going to maybe take a look at is, sound like we have a lot of alternatives here. And, you know, our agenda item is reopening dates. I wonder if we could actually break it down into the two categories of the first start item with the preschool through first grade on a beginning on a date, and then take a separate motion for the secondary grades on a start date.
Separate agenda items.
What's that?
You may need two separate agenda items, but there
may be
two motions within the same agenda item.
You don't think we could do that, Mr. Carrion, for probably not?
Probably not.
Okay.
I mean, you could make the same motion. You could make one motion with two separate. So that would work. But then you would have one vote for one item.
I have a suggestion.
Sure.
Okay. The elementary kids, their trimester is going to end. Why don't we start theirs with the new trimester? In the high school, why don't we start them with their new semester in December?
Say that again, Mr. Allison.
Okay, the elementary kids, their trimester ends, what? Pretty soon, like in around the 10th, or I don't know.
November 13th.
Yeah, November 13th. So why don't we start the elementary kids the 16th? And then the high school kids, their semester ends, and the middle school kids, their semester ends on the 16th of December. Could we start them at, you know,
make
right
motion
after that?
Well, yes. So that's what we have here already, Mr. Allison, is January 5th. Which would be the start of the second semester for high school.
You sure it's January 5? Because if their semester ends on the 16th, that's...
We got 2 weeks off for Christmas.
Yeah, it's only 2 weeks this year.
2 weeks.
Okay. Not a possibility.
Okay. Any other discussion? So,
excuse me, Mr. Rasmussen. Maybe one quick one for Mr. Cena. You mentioned Dr. Liu, and I understand you contact her frequently. How do you feel, Gary, that she would respond to us doing this? Would she be? I mean, you can't speak for her. Maybe it's a bad question, but you know. I don't want to be known as the guy that, you know, pushing the virus, spreading the virus. But it's got to be a middle ground. You mentioned two school districts that had to push back, but I can know five that are successful right now. So you know, but I don't want to be the bad guy. I want to follow, with that use of a better word, the science and the Dr. Liu's and the professionals. And if they say it's a bad idea, Crawford, I usually respond, but okay, I won't go with that. And I hope we do the same. That's all. Thank you. I mean, would you like to speculate on Dr. Liu?
Speculate again. She doesn't have the authority to tell us what to do.
Oh, I realize.
But the recommendation is to start in phases, start elementary school, middle school, and high school.
Okay.
Especially the school or districts of this size, and you know, moving parts.
Sure.
And people.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And I understand that logic.
Go ahead.
Mr. Davis, is that you?
Yeah, that was me. To me, this is a discussion about the resolution. And the resolution has specific date in it. And what I feel is the resolution needs to be amended before it is voted upon. Or you vote on the resolution and see how it flies. Then you can amend it. But to me, the smart thing to do would be to amend the resolution to get our date straight and the grades that we're going to recommend to be open before we vote on the resolution.
Right, I agree. I think what would probably happen, the way I see it, Mr. Davis, is those the dates would be contained within the motion. So correct. Whatever the motion would be made is what people would vote upon.
Correct. And I recommend that we at least start after the 13th of November in whatever grade level you want to pick.
Okay, well, I'm going to make a motion. The motion is to have preschool through first grade beginning on November 12th with one additional grade level added each week thereafter through fifth grade. And secondary grade 6 through 12 beginning on January 5th. So the motion is made by Rasmussen. Is there a second?
Second
by Ms. Scott. Okay. I'm going to have a roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom is absent. Trustee Allison.
No.
No. Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
That was a yes?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries. 1, 2, 3, 4 yes. 3 no. Excuse me, 2 no. No's were Mr. Crawford and Mr. Allison. Okay. That was our last agenda item. Meeting adjourned.
Night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.